Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Well, I told you just the other day, a couple days ago, we had Danny Aiken, the president of Southeastern Seminary, on yesterday, talking about God's providence and God's sovereignty, which is really helpful, especially if you're dealing with some really challenging things or loss or sickness. So that was the show from yesterday. You can check that out on the podcast or Facebook Live. And today, if you want to join us on Facebook Live, if you're on Facebook already, or just jump over there, just the Steve Noble Show, that's all you do. And the one reason you would do that today is because it's a rare day. It's a strange day. It's an unusual day, not just because of my awesome friend who you'll meet in just a second, but also because only four or five, maybe six times a year will you catch this particular guy, this guy being me, Steve Noble, in a coat and tie, shirt and tie, coat, sport coat, suit. It's the full suit today because we have a wedding we're going to of a young couple that we actually did their pre-marriage mentoring over 6 weeks, which is awesome. They're both pursuing the Lord hot and heavy right now. Really cool. So we're excited. But I have to finish the show at 5, pray with my friends on Facebook Live, then jump down to downtown Raleigh, which is why I have my monkey suit on right now. So anyway, just if you want to see something that people just don't see very often, join us on Facebook Live and you'll see me in a white shirt and a blue tie. So that's just rare. Anyway, the other day I was talking to you about this article. This is out of Texas. Mom says 6-year-old son is transgender. Dad disagrees. Now he might lose his son. And they're in a court battle because she's enrolled this little boy in first grade as a female named Luna. The father, however, is like, my son doesn't want to wear girls' clothes. He wears boys' clothes. He refuses to wear girls' clothes at his house. And so the whole notion of that, not dealing with the marriage issue, but the court system being involved, and now here we are arguing about a 6-year-old being transgendered, and it's just so sad, it's so disturbing, and this is getting to be more and more common, unfortunately, because much of our culture is just accepting it as yet another thing on the shelf that you can pick and choose for yourself based on how you feel. And then my good friend is quoted extensively in the article, Walt Heyer, who's been down this road himself. He was our special guest a couple years ago. He's been on the show a number of times, our special guest here in Raleigh a couple years ago at our Call to Worship event. And Walt has an incredible story, an incredible wife, and now a great ministry as somebody that went down that road for years, and God brought him back from all of that, and he's just now one of the foremost authorities and speakers from a Christian worldview on the issue of transgenderism. Mr. Walt Heyer, my good friend, how are you, buddy? Thanks for calling in.
I'm doing great. Man, you look good in a suit. You should wear one more often.
Yeah, that's a scary thing, so you know, don't get used to it. Anyway, it's great to hear from you. And just for the sake of, we've added a lot of stations since you were on last, Walt, and hopefully you have a little bit of time, but just share with people kind of your story, and obviously an abbreviated version, but just a little bit of where your perspective is coming from.
Yeah, well, I started out, you know, at the age of 4 or 5 being cross-dressed by my grandmother, convinced that I was a girl trapped in a boy's body. This went on throughout my early life. I started in 1944. They didn't even have the terms transgender, gender dysphoria, but the impact still the same. And when I finally went to a therapist, I was diagnosed with gender dysphoria. They recommended that I have hormone therapy and go through the surgery, which there was nobody else around. This was in the early 80s. There's nobody else like myself speaking out against this nonsense at the time. So I went ahead and did it. And then, 8 years later, found out that, it's categorically impossible to biologically change a man into a woman. And when you do so, that it raises and elevates their chance of suicide by some 19 times. So, and I was one of the ones who attempted suicide. And since then, now I was about 50, when I finally came out of the fog and began to study this phenomenon, realized that the people who identify as a transgender person or diagnosed with gender dysphoria definitely have something causing them to feel that way. But under the term gender dysphoria are a whole lot of things going on that often don't get properly addressed, such as body dissmorphia, dissociative disorders, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, and so forth. So once we began to identify these things and work with people, which I do today, we find that many of them are detransitioning back and finding the Lord Jesus Christ and who redeems and restores their life. So that's it in a nutshell.
Yeah, because and I think what a lot of people don't understand is that when you talk about you went down that road, you went through quote unquote sex reassignment surgery, which is a misnomer in and of itself because you cannot reassign somebody's sex and gender. And then now we're at a day today, Walt, where now those are two separate things. There's your sex, your biological sex, which you're born with, and then there's your gender, which is your mental construct, your emotional construct. Which brings us to this story out of Texas, and we'll hit the break here in a couple of minutes. But when you first see something like this, Walt, mom says 6-year-old son is transgender, dad disagrees. What's your first reaction to a story like that?
Well, the first reaction is the kid is not transgender because the basis for diagnosing a kid, which is not really the best basis to diagnose it, but the one they use is the kid persistent, insistent, and consistent about saying that he's a girl. Well, here's a kid that's only a girl when he's with mother. And every place else, when he's with family friends or with his dad, he wants nothing to do with the dress or wants nothing to do with presenting himself as a girl. So that doesn't fit the diagnosis. So it's it just doesn't jive with him being a transgender kid. So there's something else going on, and I've used the term, it appears, I'm not saying she has, but it gives the appearance that the mother has weaponized the transgender kid as part of this a divorce and a child custody case, which is really even more sad than anything I can imagine.
But seeing this with a young child like this, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years of age, is not an abnormal thing anymore, where the child is going down this road and thinking that perhaps it's a boy that wants to be a girl or a girl that wants to be a boy. And then all of a sudden, you've got all these adults that are really following a child's lead. And how do you explain that, Walt? Why are adults following the advice and the feelings of a young boy or a young girl?
Well, because they don't understand the difference between a child's curiosity about gender and what gender dysphoria is. So people are moving into the gender dysphoria idea when they see a kid who is curious about cross-gender identity. So it's quite normal for a kid to be curious about an opposite gender. In fact, it's very healthy.
Yeah, we'll pick it up there. I got to put you on hold right quick, Walt. We're coming up on a commercial break. We're talking to Walt Heyer. This is Steve Noble talking about this difficult issue. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble on the Steve Noble Show talking to my good friend Walt Heyer. SexChangeRegret.com, one of his websites, and many books available there. Walt Heyer, H-E-Y-E-R, but SexChangeRegret.com, where they've seen God has done amazing things there, not just people that are coming back from it and coming back to a healthy, wholesome, and obviously biblical way of looking at their sex, their gender, but also people that are, thinking of suicide. The suicide rates are extreme once people start going down this road. And most of us are kind of on the outside looking in on this one. But Walt Heyer went down this road himself. And praise the Lord, he brought him back from all of that. And now Walt's just a great ambassador for the truth of God and the grace of the gospel all over, not just America, but being heard all over the world. But Walt, again, thanks for being here today.
My pleasure. Thanks, Steve.
So it seems to me, Walt, and obviously you pay attention to this, God has given you this platform, but it seems to me that the rate of hearing about these transgender issues and with youngsters like 6, I know somebody here in Raleigh, North Carolina, whose child was in like a first or second grade class, and the teacher made them all do that this little boy had kind of a coming out day, and his parents were there. And, hey, let's all be excited and support little Billy, who we're now going to call Laura or whatever it was. And they have the kids, okay, let's all clap for this little boy. And he's so courageous and blah, 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 blah. It seems to me like this is just getting worse and worse and at an increasing rate. Or am I just being kind of paranoid?
No. The evidence with the attempted suicide rates among this population from 12 to 24 who identify as transgender young kids is at 50%. So it can't be a good thing. In fact, what we Michelle Critello, who's very well informed on this, pediatrician, studies this stuff, says affirming a young child that age is institutionalized child abuse. I agree.
Yeah, and I don't think that's too strong a term. It's absolutely child abuse, and there's obviously a lot of spiritual things going on behind that. But when we talk about the suicide rate, of course, a lot of people say, well, that's because you guys being, you know, traditionalists like us or Christians like us, don't accept them. Yeah. We don't affirm them. But that's not it at all, is it?
No, it's not. What we know is the truth is that they're suffering from some kind of misconception that was planted a seed, just like it was with me. My grandmother made me believe that I was someone that I wasn't. And when you begin to do that, you see, any time you tell a kid that their cross-gender identity is okay, at the very same time, you're telling them who they are, who God made them to be, is wrong, that there's something wrong with them. So automatically, you're telling the kid, there's something wrong with you. So that's what resonates in their head, is that there's something wrong with me. There's something wrong with me. And this begins to erode, you know, their self-confidence, their self-esteem, their ability to communicate, their ability to interact with other children. Now they're trying to use transgender identities as a way to help the person through this. And it may temporarily do that, but obviously with a high degree of suicide attempts among this population, it doesn't work. And so what we should be doing is affirming these young people in the gender that God made them in and trying to find out why they have these feelings and sit down and talk to them. I did this with one mother in just an exchange of some emails, and I said, well, why don't you sit down and ask your 14-year-old daughter why she feels this way? And her mother did. And 2 days later, she wrote me back, said, Walt, I'm so glad I had this conversation with my daughter. My daughter told me that she had been sexually abused by my ex-husband, and she said she wanted to go become a transgender because she wanted to, listen to this, erase her life. So you see, there's always something that happened. Either the parent, like in this case in Texas, something is causing them to not identify with who they are, and they attempt to identify with someone who they are not, nor can they ever become. And so if we can take enough time to sit down with these young people and actually open up a dialogue with them and ask them why they're feeling this way, where did you get the idea? Did you get it from your older brother? Did you get it from a neighbor? Did you get it from your dad, your mom? Where did it come from? Because kids don't know what gender dysphoria is and what transgenderism is unless an adult is telling them.
Yeah, and so what kind of pushback are you getting as you're out there? You know, you just did radio before. Now you do radio, television, internet stuff. What kind of pushback are you getting out there? Obviously, people like you and like me, Walt, on this side of, quote-unquote, this side of the aisle, are all in agreement. It makes perfect sense, and we're actually caring about children and people that are dealing with transgenderism. But that's our part of the team. What about the other reaction that you're running into out there?
Well, you'll be amazed to know that I get homosexuals like I did today from New York who wrote, and we are getting both sides. I would say 98% of the people agree that this is not a good thing. I'm not getting any pushback.
Wow.
Everybody agrees that there's something wrong. It doesn't matter whether they're homosexual. Even transgenders themselves are in support of doing something to prevent the mother from continuing the cross-dressing with his kid. So I'm not getting zero pushback at all. Everyone is in total agreement, both sides of the aisle, no matter whether they're Christian or not Christian, homosexual or not, transgender or not, everyone agrees in this one case.
Yeah, in this particular case, but in the conversation at large, I mean, we see the media, which is obviously largely controlled by a liberal narrative and a non-biblical narrative. It's all about your feelings, and we want to affirm who you are and who you think you are. But that, like you were saying, this is people that are confused. And like a woman from, a man, he's born Ian Hamilton from Great Britain, who I interviewed, they interviewed me and then I interviewed him, now goes by Abby Austin, spent 5 years in Thailand, had 36 operations. And so he was confused, had gender confusion when he was young. when he finally came out and said it to his parents, his dad, who was kind of a drunk, beat the tar out of him, and then they sent him off to a military school where he was raped by one of the male teachers. And so it's just like one terrible thing after another. And, and is that common, that you always have that kind of trigger thing, that some terrible thing happens that's involved at or after their confusion begins, mental, emotional, and otherwise?
Yeah, 100% of the time of the people that I work with can identify an event, a situation that happened to them that caused them to not want to be who they are and turn to transgenderism as an escape from the pain that was caused them. And I would say 40 to 45% of them were sexually abused, many of them emotionally abused, some physically abused, psychological abuse, abandonment, broken homes, drunken fathers, parents that are put them in foster care, bounced around from foster homes. The list goes on. Some of the letters I get, I actually weep when I read them, and that's why I put them in my new book, Trans Life Survivors. It has the stories that anybody can read in that book. It just came out a month ago, and it has their stories in it. You can see from their own words, because I kept the emails they sent me intact so that the reader could actually see what they're saying. I didn't alter them at all, except I took out where their home location was and their identity, so people couldn't reach them.
Well, do you need to get going, Walter? Do you have a couple more minutes? I've got a four-minute break now.
Yeah, I could do a couple more minutes.
Okay, yeah, I want to talk about the book specifically, so I'll put you on hold. We'll keep talking to Walt Heyer, sexchangeregret.com, and the brand-new book, Trans Life Survivors. Actual emails includes actual emails that Walt has been receiving, he and his wife, from people that are getting out of this and finding some wholesome thinking. They're finding right thinking. They're finding health and wellness. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble. It's the Steve Noble Show, talking about, unfortunately, something that's become quite common conversation, quite common in the news, and more people that I know personally that are dealing with the issue of transgenderism and gender confusion. And we have a good chunk of our culture in America and now around the world, that is fully supportive of it. And hey, that's just, if you believe that you should be a woman and you were born a man, and that's your sex is this, but your gender is your societal, social, mental, emotional construct of yourself. You just decide. But that's your confusion. It's not a personal understanding that's to be indulged. It's a serious mental and emotional problem that needs to be helped and needs counseling and needs clarity instead of more confusion. And the world just kind of clapping as many of these people are going down this road. We're talking to Walt Heyer. Sexchangeregret.com is their website. Just great resources there and information for dealing with this subject, if it's somebody in your family or a friend, older, younger. And then Walt's brand new book, Trans Life Survivors, just came out a couple weeks ago. Trans Life Survivors. We put a link up on Facebook for the Amazon link. And Walt, with these stories, I had a question, because you've been down this road, obviously, yourself. So what happens with somebody that goes down the transgender road and then they actually go through a sex reassignment surgery, quote unquote, and then they, I guess it's kind of like Daniel chapter 4, they come to their senses, they get counseling, whatever happens, and then they decide, oh my goodness, I need to go back to who I was made to be. But they've already gone through all these surgeries. I mean, what can possibly be done at that point? How do you then find kind of a healthy way of living, and what kind of stories are you sharing in your brand new book, Trans Life Survivors?
Yeah, well, I would say, Steve, that probably 99% of the people can't restore the genitalia of the man that was, had their genitalia altered. You can't fix that. That's done and gone. So you have to come to the conclusion, like many men who have cancer. This surgery actually was originally used to treat men with cancer. Then they've taken it to be used for gender reassignment surgery. It was primarily a cancer surgery. Wow. For people who had genitalia cancer. So you have to come to the conclusion that somehow, the Lord spared you. Your identity is in Christ. It's not in your genitalia. And then you get therapy and realize that you never actually changed biologically from male to female. So then all that's happened was the surgeon mutilated you, and you have to live with the mutilation that he did, and just get on your knees and continue to pray to the Lord Jesus Christ that he keeps you whole and continues to uplift you and help others.
It's just like, I mean, this might be a reach in terms of an example or an analogy, but somebody that comes back from Afghanistan or Iraq or whatever, and they've lost a leg or they've lost both legs, and then they have to find a new normal. They're not going to get their legs back, and they just have to find another way to live and to exist and to find happiness and meaning. But through Christ, you can do that. I mean, you're a perfect example yourself. So what kind of stories are you sharing in the brand new book, Trans Life Survivors? And then I have one question from a Facebook Live friend, and then we'll let you go.
Yeah. There's many of them. You know, there's Billy's story who, you know, I started working with him, and he said, gee, Walt, I don't know why I did this. And I said, well, there's got to be a reason why you did it. And we began to discuss this over the phone. I talked to him personally in Scottsdale, Arizona, and what we came to the, after he talked a little bit, he says, you know, I was sexually abused when I was at a summer camp by my diving coach, and he said it was right after that that I decided that I wanted to become a transgender female. So what we see some young boys when they're sexually molested want to rid themselves of their genitalia because they think they'll never be sexually abused again if their genitalia is gone.
Wow.
And so they identify as a female as a way to escape being ever sexually abused again. So that's a fairly common story.
Yeah, that's just so remarkably sad. But there's hope, obviously, and Christ is enough to bring anybody through that and to come back to a great life that is full of meaning and can be healthy and really obviously impactful on other people. I had one friend on Facebook Live. I think this is a great question, and then we'll let you go. But people, I think a lot of us struggle. We hear about this stuff all the time, and a lot of people just choose to look the other way. So the average Christian in America, Walt, how informed should we be on this issue? How much time should we spend becoming more informed about the issue of transgenderism versus just kind of some people just will lose their minds after a while and then completely turn it off because it's just so crazy and disturbing. They just can't handle it.
Well, I think it's real important if we're in a position to talk to the people, especially if we're in a church environment. I always encourage people to take them to the coffee shop, sit down and talk to them, befriend them, take them to lunch, and get to know them well enough where they will finally begin to disclose to you why they did it. And over a period of time, they will loosen their grip on fear, and they'll let you in on that. And you can begin to actually help them understand these people are hurting. That's what people need to understand. They're not willfully doing this to upset the church or their friends or their family. Something happened to them, and we need to be there to help them come out of that. And that's why the book is so important. If people read the book, they'll learn. There's many research things in there that help people better understand how to help them as well.
The name of Walt Heyer's brand new book, Trans Life Survivors. You can get it on Amazon. We put a link up on the Facebook Live feed today, or you can go to Walt's website, sexchangeregret.com. Walt, I look forward to getting through the book myself, and boy, it'd be great if any of those folks would be willing to come on and share their story, and we always appreciate you and what God is doing in and through you. Tell your wife I said hello, please.
You bet. Thank you, and you look great in a suit. Wear it again.
All right, pal. Thanks. We'll talk to you later. God bless you.
You bet. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. That was Walt Heyer, just an incredible man, and I just found out about him. This is probably 3 or 4 years ago, and he happened to be, he and his wife live out in Arizona, and they happened to be coming through North Carolina, and we connected via email, and I'm like, hey, would you be willing to get on the radio? And he said, hey, we'll do you one better. We'll drive through Raleigh, and that's when we got to become friends and kind of went from there, and then he's been on the show a number of times. He shared his testimony 2 years ago on at Called to Worship, which was just fantastic, super powerful. We actually have that on video. It's online, so I'll put a link up to that after the next break. I'll put a link on there. But like somebody said, that question is, you know, it's difficult. I'm reading this stuff and investing in these things all the time because of what role God has me playing in the culture via the radio show and social media platforms and speaking out on this stuff. So I have to be involved in it and be well-versed in it. But for you and for people that ask that question, they're just like, I'm so sick of hearing it. It's just so crazy. It's insane. I just don't want to deal with it. But I would argue that in order to help our gospel witness, we have to be at least conversant in what's going on in the world around us, because you're going to encounter a lot of people that either don't have a position on this particular issue, transgenderism, or they do have a position and they're just willing to kind of embrace it and say, well, you know, hey, whatever's good for you is good for you. And what's good for me is good for me. But when the culture's talking about it, I want to be somewhat conversant in it. And then, of course, it's different if you know somebody, if you have a friend, somebody in your family, grandson, granddaughter, whatever the case may be, then it's incumbent upon you to get more than conversant. You need to get really well informed. But those things come and go. But I would always caution people, just like with politics, I don't talk about politics every day on the show, because a steady diet of that is not good for you. I say, hey, should I drink 5 Cokes a day and eat 3 candy bars a day? No, you should not. You know that. I know that. We know that intrinsically. And the same thing's true. I think you have to be careful when you find yourself either looking down your nose and condemning people that are living outside of a biblical worldview, and they just make you sick and mad all the time. You got to be really careful with how you are consuming social media and information. If it starts to really harden or poison your heart, you got to be careful with that. You also got to go to the Lord with that and say, Lord, help me to see these people that I vehemently disagree with, and many of whom are not kind of in your face, but there are elements of all these different movements that are militant, period. And are they your enemy? I would say no, they are not. They're being used by your enemy in many ways. And of course, their free will is also involved in there. But I don't look at those people as my enemy anymore. I just look at them as people made in the image of God who have gone down different roads. They all have a story. If we're willing to stop and listen and spend time with them and build a relationship, it's amazing what God can do. So I think we need to remain conversant in these issues. But don't get overwhelmed by it. And when you find yourself getting overwhelmed by it, walk away. Spend more time in God's word and prayer and fellowship with other Christians. But again, I think it helps us in our gospel witness to be conversant in the issues of the day. You don't necessarily have to be an expert, but if it's somewhere in your sphere of influence and you're dealing with people that are down one of these roads, be it transgenderism or whatever, the life issue, then you need to be more conversant. You need to be really well equipped, gentle as doves and wise as a serpent. So that's all I'm going to say on that. Okay, so let me throw this one in here, because this garbage happens every year, and as we come into the Christmas season. But this is a new one, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, called Bigoted and Seriously Problematic. So I'm just going to spend a minute on that, because I'm not going to give it a whole lot of my time or yours. A little warning about Netflix, you know, because like our 13-year-old daughter watches some things on Netflix, and I pay attention to some of it, but I had no idea that it could be as bad as it is. There's a show out there that celebrates pedophilia, abortion, masturbation for preteens, and that's on Netflix. And then we'll do a movie review after that. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble. It is the Steve Noble Show, and we appreciated having our friend Walt Heyer, who went down the transgender road, sex reassignment surgery, the whole nine, and like he said, when God started to kind of work in his life and there were some Christians that came alongside of him and stayed with him, he had as much of it reversed as he could. But the things below the belt, you can't. And he's like, you know, you just got to deal with the fact that a surgeon essentially mutilated your genitalia area and did something unnatural and wrong. And then you have to learn to live with it, which is what Walt's done for. He's been married a second marriage, lost his first marriage, was estranged from his kids, but God restored his relationship with his children. Just one miracle after another. And now he's counseled people out of suicide and counseled people back from transgenderism. And so just a great resource. And just so happy that he's a part of my life and a part of the show. But that was Walt Heyer. And it was great to hear from him. So Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. This was news to me, but, you know, apparently I'm just an ignorant old white guy. But classic called Bigoted, Seriously Problematic, Huffington Post. Always consider the source. Was lampooned after saying Christmas classic Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer was seriously problematic over claims that it features sexism and bullying. Viewers are noticing the tale may not be so jolly after all, the outlet's video said, and they're sharing their observations online. Now, let me just say something about that right quick. There's so many news stories now about random Joe Blow here or there, some woman, some man, that tweets with response as a response to a story, something going on in the news, and the tweets themselves by just average, ordinary, maybe not so ordinary, citizens are out there. And then all of a sudden, that becomes the story. This is the case. This is a perfect case of that. You go, wow, well, who's saying that Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer is bigoted, homophobic, and dangerous, yada, yada, yada? Well, it's some people on Twitter, and so Huffington Post makes a story out of it. Hashtag Rudolph. Yearly reminder that Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer is a parable on racism and homophobia, with Santa as a bigoted, exploitive word I can't say. One comment shared by Huffington Post: Santa's operation is an HR nightmare and in serious need of diversity and inclusion training, read another. And you just go, really? And that becomes the story. And so when you see stuff like this, and when I see it, I'm like, what? And I jump in there and I look at it and I read it and I get, ticked off and frustrated. And then I kind of come back to my senses afterwards. I said, this is a story. The Huffington Post is reporting something on Twitter that they probably agree with and think it's a serious issue. But it isn't, because millions and millions, tens of millions of Americans are going to watch Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. And you see a kid who's different from everybody else, who gets mistreated by people, and his dad's ashamed of him. And, of course, that makes him homophobic. But eventually he overcomes all that. And people come to their senses, and they apologize, and there's reconciliation. And so it's the little train that could. And that's a good lesson. But today in our environment, you get three or four tweets out of it that go ballistic and say Rudolph's the worst thing on the planet, next to the church itself, and it's a news story. So that's what I'll do with that one. Okay, that's out of here. The Netflix thing, I just wanted to remind you about that, this Netflix animated series, Big Mouth. I couldn't play these clips on the air because I would get in trouble with the FCC. Yet Netflix has it out there. Netflix animation celebrates pedophilia, abortion, and masturbation for preteens. It's a cartoon. They did a whole cartoon, Big Mouth Season 2, all about Planned Parenthood. Woo, what an awesome thing. Let's drive our kids to Planned Parenthood. And again, the characters in this particular Netflix cartoon are 14, 13, 12, that age. And there's all kinds of crazy, sick, lewd, disturbing things going on here. Sexual things, masturbation, this, that, and the other thing. I mean, graphic things that you see, naked people, dancing, and blah, 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 human-sized condoms, this, that, and the other thing. I mean, it's crazy, and it's on Netflix. And I said to my 13-year-old daughter, I saw this story yesterday, and I said, hey, honey, have you heard of Big Mouth on Netflix? And she goes, I've heard of it, but I don't want to watch it. But my 13-year-old had heard of it, and I hadn't. So, all right, go ahead, pick up the tomatoes and start throwing them at me as a horrible father. But there's just so much out there, you can't possibly keep up with it all. So, but you can keep up with the source. So Netflix, just so you know, does have parental controls, and you can get in there because this one's, fortunately, Big Mouth is labeled as mature adult, MA, they call it. So you can get in there and set your Netflix things. But if you think it's okay and you just see a bunch of cartoons, and that's fine. This one's a cartoon. And it's disgusting and sick. This is like Sodom and Gomorrah TV or something. It's just unbelievable. But it's out there. Like Netflix, they have another show that just came out called Baby. It's an Italian series, a new Italian drama, Baby, because it has a 14 and a 15-year-old girl that decide to become prostitutes. And that's part of the story. And that's on Netflix. So that's out there. So let the buyer beware, right? And so when I find about this stuff, because I know a lot of you are parents and grandparents, then I'm going to share it with you, as well as being more educated about it myself. So there you go. That's important. So be careful, beware when it comes to Netflix. All right. So on Fridays now, as I started this several weeks ago, I'm a movie buff anyway, and I like to go see movies and come at them from a biblical perspective and with a biblical worldview, and to try to find some redeeming things there. And then some things, if the culture, like I said earlier, if the culture's talking about, the culture's there, I want to be there because I want to be able to engage the culture and talk to them about these things. So I went to go see Creed 2, which is a part of the Rocky franchise, and there's actually a lot of good stuff in there. There's a couple scenes early on. There's a scene where Adonis, who's Apollo Creed's son, so Apollo Creed fought Rocky, and then Apollo Creed fought Drago in another Rocky movie, the guy from Russia, and he killed Apollo Creed, and then eventually Rocky fought Drago and beat Drago. So all that stuff's in there, but Adonis is Apollo Creed's son. So he proposes to his girlfriend, and they're, you know, they start kind of kissing passionately, and their shirts come off. She's got a bra on, but you know, at that one, you're like, okay, don't need that. But you know, at one point, she says, and this was a pro-life message. Now, I don't think they're sitting there going, we need to put a pro-life message in there. But this is what it is, because they find out later that they're pregnant. And she goes, I don't know if I or we are ready. And that kind of hangs out there. This is his wife now. I don't know if we're ready for a baby. I wasn't really thinking about it this soon. And in our culture, you just go deal with it, right? My wife just dealt with somebody today at a crisis pregnancy center. She's like, yeah, I have two kids already. I don't want to know it. So, you know, I'm probably just getting an abortion. Big deal. But Adonis Creed, Apollo Creed's son, says, well, let's get ready then. So there's no way that you're not going to have this baby. And that was great. It's just little things like that. And I'm like, you know what? Praise the Lord that that's in there. Because there's a lot of people seeing this movie, Creed 2, and praise the Lord it's in there. There are some profane language, nearly 15 S words. S, so you know what that is. A smattering of some other things. The B word, the D word. H, God's name is misused once. Not really drug and alcohol. Very violent, obviously, because it's boxing. But there's a lot of things in here that are really good and tug on the heartstrings and point to some biblical truths. Reconciliation is a big part of this. Rocky, in this movie, it's, you know, Sylvester Stallone plays Rocky, and he's befriended and has, that was what the first Creed movie was about. Rocky got cancer, and Apollo Creed's son Adonis stayed with him, and then eventually Rocky helped him with his boxing and everything. But Rocky is estranged, has never met his grandson, and you know he knows he needs to, and Creed, Adonis Creed, is, you know, pushing on him, and eventually that reconciliation happens towards the end of the movie. And so that's a message that needs to be out there. You know what percentage of kids are growing up without their fathers in the home? It's over 42% now in America. The breakdown of the family, which Walt Heyer was talking about earlier, which has a lot to do with transgenderism. But in this case, eventually, he reconciles. He humbles himself and he reconciles to go be part of his family. And that father-son dynamic, whether it was with Adonis Creed and his father who died, and out trying to please his father and find out who he is, or him and Rocky's kind of a father figure, and then Rocky with his own son and his grandson. Man, it really reminds you that time is precious and family is precious. And we need to make sure we're sowing into that. You get busy with your career and making money and this, that, and the other thing. But it was a great reminder in many places of that. So I thought that was great. This was from a movie Guide, A Strong Moral Worldview, with some Christian redemptive elements, stresses family reconciliation, honoring one's parents, and learning to be a better man. There's a visit to a couple grave sites with some crucifixions and stuff. I don't give that much credit. But it's there, and there are some redeeming things in the movie. And it's interesting, Ivan Drago, who, you know, is that big, huge dude, who's actually an MIT grad, the actor that plays Ivan Drago. He was Ivan in the original Rocky movie, and he plays him an older kind of, they're both kind of has-beens. And Russia dumped him because he lost. And because that's always living for is the approval of man. And in the end, when his son wins first, Drago Jr. wins first and then loses at the end, of course, because that's what always happens in the Rocky movies. The bad guy loses. But then the father and son reconcile and figure out, hey, you know what? Our relationship together as a father and a son is more important than the accolades of man or the success that the world can offer. And you're living for the wrong things. Now, when I watch a movie like this, when you watch a movie like this, I will pull out the things that I can pull out, and that encourages me and reminds me. It made me think as soon as I came out of there today, I said, I got to spend more time with both my sons. I got to make sure my relationship is healthy with both my sons. I wasn't thinking about that yesterday. I was thinking about it today when I came out of the movie. And what am I living for? And what kind of man am I anyway? What makes the man? What, dad, son, brother, what makes you? What makes a man, if you're a follower of Christ, what makes you a man? What do you build your self-esteem on? Well, first of all, it started on a cross 2,000 years ago. And the things of the world are not going to get it done for you. We've all tried that, right? You got that big hole, you try to fill it up with sex, drugs, rock and roll, whatever, success, money. It doesn't work. So many characters in this movie, they find out it doesn't work either. And what do they come back to? Relationships. Father and son. Relationships. It's always about relationships. The world cannot give you that, but God does. God can, God will. First in a relationship with Him through His Son, Jesus Christ, and then a relationship with others. It really is all about relationships. So I would definitely recommend Creed 2. I probably would not take my 10-year-old to it, but if you have a son, I definitely take your son to it. And then make sure you teach when you come out of these things, because there's a lot of fruit on that tree. This is Steve Noble on the Steve Noble Show. God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon. And like my dad always said, ever forward.